We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus, hour number two. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Henry Frayne is at the controls. Well, it sort of goes without saying that the presence now in our lives of the internet and the fact that there is more and more information available in digital form, you know, these two developments have changed our lives in many ways. And so one of the commonplace things that we always say is that now we have this access to a vast wealth of information. Virtually any question can be answered. The problem is that sometimes to get to what you want, you have to wade through a lot of stuff that you don't want. This morning, in this hour of Focus, we'll talk about some of the unsung heroes of the digital information age, people who knew that even with all of the information that is available on the internet, we would still need human help in getting the answers we need. And the people I'm talking about are the librarians of this great land, people that are celebrated in a recent book that we'll be talking about, by our guest for this hour, Marilyn Johnson. The title of her book is This Book is Overdue, the subtitle How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Marilyn Johnson has been a staff writer for Life, where she specialized in writing obituaries of celebrities who were not quite yet dead. Her first book, in fact, was about obituaries and people who write them, that book, The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and the Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. It was a very popular book, and now she's out with a new one, and there is a connection between the two subjects, which we will talk about here as we get going. Questions are certainly welcome. Number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. And you may also send along your comments and questions by email. And the address is will-talk, so that's just like it looks, W-I-L-L-talk at illinois.edu. So at any point here, you have questions, comments, you can call, you can write to us. We'd certainly welcome folks into the conversation. And Marilyn Johnson, hello.
Hi, David. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Well, I appreciate you being with us. This is a kind of a favorite subject of mine, I think, and maybe in part because over time I have talked with some people about it, and we here at the university have a lot of particularly, you know, specialty libraries around the campus, but we also have one really big library, and library and information science is very big here, so it's the kind of thing that we have talked about on and off over the years, and it's been interesting to see how things developed, moving from that point where people were wondering, did the brick-and-mortar library as an institution actually have a future?
Oh, this makes me crazy. If you go in any library, you'll see right away, it certainly has a present. And if you've had any kind of experience trying to make your computer do what you want it to do, or access the internet without a computer, you'll know that you have to go to the library. Yeah. And you need those humans.
Yeah. And certainly we can see that, I think that maybe that the people who ran big research libraries like that we have maybe weren't quite so worried. But there was this question about the community library. And one of the things I think we know is that business is booming at community libraries, and that they, if anything, have seen increases in demands for their services, demands for a wider range of services, and more libraries are really becoming community centers.
They are really taking over for the community centers, and they are now the places where we have our public computers. It's impossible for us to really navigate modern life without getting on the computer ourselves or having someone else do it for us. It's getting harder to navigate the government bureaucracy without going online, and there are jobs that you can't apply for without without sending an email.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you do that without a computer?
Yeah, I just was, I think I mentioned this to somebody on a recent program. I happen to be in a local coffee shop that's part of a major national chain. And I was sitting there having coffee, and someone came in and asked if they had a job application. And the person behind the counter said, oh, well, that's all online now.
Yes.
And I thought, whoa, that's really interesting. And then I guess I thought, well, yeah, what if you don't happen to have easy access to a computer? What do you do then?
Well, you know, you're applying for a minimum wage job. Why can't you just walk in the Apple store and buy a computer?
Well, of course, like, no problem there.
There's a no-brainer there. And I don't know about you, but every time I get funneled into one of those telephone calls that says, you know, dial 2 if you need this and 3 if you need that, I always need the human help.
Yeah. Well, and I just to underscore something you've said, though, I think this is really important for people to keep in mind, particularly if they themselves have internet at home and they have computers and they know how to handle that technology. For significant numbers of people, their only way to access the internet is with publicly available computers that are there in the library.
Yes, and it makes sense for us to be sharing resources like that these days, right? We all don't need our own laptops. We don't need our own computers. It's, you know, how often do you need it? But to go into a place where our public monies have pooled these things, that was the idea behind sharing books. And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. There, though, it gives the opportunity to make another point, which I do think is important, too, is that on the one hand, if you talk about the value of the library, what makes it cool is, well, there's all this great stuff there and it's free. And you would have to say, well, yeah, except that
it's not free.
It's not free. No,
yeah.
It's not free.
It's not free. Those are our public monies. Those are our libraries. The public libraries are ours. And the people that have been hired to work in them are there to serve us. And they're remarkable people. I mean, you know, if you sit at home, even the people who know what they're doing on the internet, let's say they, you know, put in a search term in Google. You put in Buddhism in Google, and you get 13 million hits, 13 million items. And how do you navigate that kind of, what do you do next? it's a crazy... there's so much information, and there's so much information that isn't online and not in digital form. And it makes a tremendous difference to have somebody who knows what a reliable source is and who knows how to evaluate it and who knows a path through it and who can tell you about the government documents that might be pertinent. I think people who know their way around information are holding the keys to our future.
Yeah. And we talked about libraries becoming community centers, and mm-hmm. we mentioned the fact that demand for their services just continues to grow. Even just counting the number of people who walk through the door, it's going up and up and up now, but they're also tax-supported institutions, and the economic base of the community is the base for the library. So particularly over the last year or two, are libraries having a hard time?
Oh, people act like it's a luxury, and it's often the first thing to be cut in a budget. And it is not a luxury. It is really, how can you cut something that's a safe place for kids to go and teenagers? How can you cut something that is a lifeline for people who are in business for themselves? And freelancers, that's their office. And it is as we have fewer and fewer personal resources, going to the library to share in the books and the DVDs and the other things that they have, it's ridiculous that we have this incredible investment and the doors are shutting on Saturdays in Queens. I mean, you know, that's the day that you go with your family to the library. That's the alternative to going to the mall.
Good. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that there was this connection between your last project, The Deadbeat, and this book, that connection being what?
Well, I happened to read a number of obituaries of phenomenal librarians at around the same time. And I started a file. And one thing I noticed, they were fascinating lives. And each one of them was completely different from the next. There were librarians who were the heart and soul of their community, who had organized all the children and taught them how to sail, and people were remembering them with tears in their eyes. And there were others who were taking all the information that were in printed form and figuring out a way to convert it to digital form. Or they were taking the catalogs, the old-fashioned card catalogs, and putting them in a searchable database. And, you know, between the visionaries and the heart and soul of the community, they covered this huge range. They seemed to reach people's brains and their hearts. And I thought, this would be a great profession to follow around. I want to catch the people before they land in the open.
And one of the things that really comes through is that in spite of the, and probably people recognize that it is a stereotype, but we do have a stereotype of the librarian, basically somebody who is a kind of matronly white woman. And in fact, there are all kinds of librarians, and certainly there are men who work in this profession.
Tons of them. And I'm telling you, I had so much fun finding wild and crazy librarians. And they're a dime a dozen. Those people are nuts. You ask them a question, and they have a poker face, and you really can't shock a librarian. But if you ask a librarian a question about himself or herself, what you end up finding out is a door opens to another world. And I've found librarians who are experts in all kinds of things. There's a fantasy football librarian out there.
Well, I'm sure that there are people who specialize in knowing what can be known about particular fields of knowledge, what books there are on this subject, what all the printed matter is, everything that there is to know about that thing.
Mm-hmm. But there are also, you know, underutilized librarians who don't have full-time work, or they're just getting out of library and information science school, and they've hung their shingle up on the web, and they've basically said, here's my subject. If you have any questions about it, just ask me. I'll write a blog about this thing that I'm fascinated by.
And how do you find people like that?
Oh, well, read the book. You know, you can go. I have been paying attention to all of these library information services, like LIS, Library Information Service, or Resource Shelf. And these are wonderful places that gather all the news about information and information professionals and keep you up to date with them. Mm-hmm. So I just found out yesterday about a library in Ohio that has a cake pan collection. And they have about 300 cake pans that are in, you know, the shape of Barney the Dinosaur or Elmo or the Playboy Bunny Head. And you can check out one of these cake pans for 7 days as if you were checking out a book.
I'm sure if you were a baker, or if you just wanted to had some special occasion and you wanted to make a novelty cake,
right?
The idea that you could go and down to the library and check out a cake pan,
right?
That's actually pretty cool.
Isn't it cool? Yeah.
Well, we have a caller. Would welcome others. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Caller is in Bartlett on our toll free line here, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, David. Good morning, guest. You know, one of the things I found out when I do research, libraries don't necessarily have all the information. And the reason I say this is because I do a lot of research in kind of my profession and kind of my hobby, too. I found out that I want to say some of the chain stores have it, and some of the bigger libraries have it. I'm in a small town that doesn't have the accessibility. That's one reason why you're seeing a lack of people going to the, you know, it's good for little kids, but for toddlers up to, I don't know, you know, through grade school into maybe junior high, but high school, is another fact. When I had my kids growing up, we basically had to do the research. A lot of it was on present-day stuff, and they didn't have the information up front. You had to go either to Newsstand or Barnes & Noble or other issues, you know, or to even to a major university like Northern, because I'm close to Northern Illinois. So I was just curious what your comment might be on that.
Well, if a library has a computer and interlibrary loan and resourceful librarians, then they can get hold of the current information. I know what you mean, because when I go to travel somewhere, I want a travel book that's up to date. I want the one that's the most recently published. And it's hard sometimes for libraries to keep those in hardcover form. But they all subscribe to databases that are up to the minute, and they know their way around these databases. I mean, they can access for you the latest travel magazine articles about the place that you might be going to. So if you use the librarian resource and your requirement is to be as up-to-date as possible, you might not have to go and invest at Borders.
And I suppose it's certainly true, though, different libraries are, and I'm sure that smaller libraries, small community libraries, maybe do have some limitations on what they can do simply because they only have so much money to put into making the operation go.
Well, but that, I mean, I think that that's obvious in some ways, but it's also almost all libraries, there are very few independent libraries. They're all usually networked with a whole collection of other libraries, so they can pool their resources. And most of the libraries, the local libraries where I live, have an agreement with all of the academic libraries in the area. So if I need a book that none of my public libraries own, and you can believe that I requested some pretty obscure things in researching this book, they would ask the library out on Long Island to send a copy to me, and I was able to get it and pick it up at the library. I mean, I think particularly in the networked world right now, that which used to be a much bigger limitation has been reduced tremendously, and you'd be surprised if you enlist their help at how much you can get your hands on and how up-to-date it is.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Marilyn Johnson. She is the author of a recently published book. The title is This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. And it's about the library as an institution of the digital information age and about how librarians are really leading us, taking the role of trying to be the guides for us as we get into this new territory. Marilyn Johnson is also the book author of the book The Deadbeat, which is about obituaries and people who write them. That was her first book. Her new book, This Book is Overdue, is published by Harper and is out in bookstores now, or you probably could even find it at the library. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So those are the phone numbers. One is the local number. The other is the toll-free line. And then, of course, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We want to take a second here, Marilyn, to encourage people to support the radio station. This is our spring fundraising period, and you know, most of the time what we want to do is bring people to programs and not interrupt them with things that sound like this. We just want to, though, make the point that occasionally we do it, and we do it because it's the best way of getting the message out to people that support for the station is really important. And so if you're not a supporter, if you've never made a pledge, and that means sending some money to the radio station, this would be a great time to do it. And you can do that right now, in fact, by calling us or by going online. Jack Brighton is here in the studio with me. He's the guy who's our head web guy and is the producer emeritus.
Yes.
Of this show, Focus 580. For a
you
long
betcha.
Time, he was my producer. Before he required all of his digital skills and then went on to greatness as a web guru.
Well, greatness might be overstating it, but we're trying to get good at this stuff. And let me just quickly mention the phone numbers that you can call while I'm talking about that stuff. 217-244 9455. That's the pledge line, and please use that line and make your contribution. If you've never pledged before, your pledge is overdue, not your books. So we hope you will make a call and support this great program, Focus 580, which I am proud to have associated myself with for so long. And also, if you want to go online and pledge, the address is willpledge.org. Very quick and simple. We have heard from 531 of you so far this week during this drive, which is really impressive. We're trying to get to 1,000 by the end of the week. So we're more than halfway there, but we still have some heavy lifting to go. So your pledge makes a big difference. 217-244-9455. Call that right now or go online to willpledge.org. And David, I wanted to mention that we are engaged in a lot of library science activities here as well. I mean, as you know, we archive all the shows that we do here on Focus 580, all the news stories, all the various other things that we produce on WILL, local produced programs, your community programs are on our website at will.illinois.edu. And we actually, you know, take a fair amount of effort in cataloging stuff, actually, not just throwing it up on the website. We have a project we did last year called the American Archive Project, which you can find at will.illinois.edu/American Archive, which took a lot of audio and video from the 50s, 60s, and 70s related to the civil rights movement, and we cataloged it to the nth degree and put it online. So if I could just squeeze that in, I guess I just did.
No, I think that that's really, I think it's something that's really cool and something that, it's a good thing to mention, and it certainly connects to whatever, what is it is here we're talking about. Because this was material that had been, was kept here at the university,
right,
but was not
accessible.
Easily accessible. So what happened with the help of some grant money, mm-hmm, that was available, we digitized it and then made it possible so that then if you have internet access, you can go and you can listen to some really amazing stuff.
Thurgood Marshall, Langston Hughes, James Baldwin, all this great, great stuff that happened here at the University of Illinois that WILL broadcast originally back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but had not been heard since then. So that's all accessible now. That's the kind of thing, you know, in addition to what we're doing on the air, we're now increasingly doing this kind of thing online and engaging in kinds of educational services, providing things to schools, et cetera. And, you know, this is the kind of thing, again, public radio, public broadcasting, public media, as we now say, can do with your support. That's, you know, I mean, I'd love to talk more about the stuff and go into the details, but the thing I want to say is if this is something that you think we ought to be doing, and I think that we can demonstrate has a incredible value to our communities, we ask you to support that with your pledge right now at 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org.
Hey, thank you very much. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus is Marilyn Johnson, and her book, her most recent book, is This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All, and it's published by Harper. Do people in the field, Marilyn, actually use the term cybrarian?
Well, some of them do. I got it from a library information science student, and there are librarians who call themselves cybrarians and are out there with their blogs, and that's in the title. But it's not universally used, and I thought it would be a very useful term to let you know that they were in cyberspace,
mm-hmm,
and that was a really a focus of part of the book.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with some more folks. We'll go to next to someone in Champaign and line one.
Hi.
Hello. Yes.
I just wanted to mention back when the internet was not the internet yet, when it was called BitNet or World Wide Web, and it didn't have search engines or anything like that. I was working at the university, and our IT guy came by one day and said, "Oh, there's this list that you can get on the computer." And I said, "You know, what's this all about?" And he introduced me to a list called K9L, which was about dogs, which is what I am interested in, and he knew that. And they were all librarians, because those were the people who were online at that time. This was in the very early beginnings. It was called BitNet, even at the time. So this very early beginnings of the internet and being able, before search engines. So the librarians knew how to get on, knew how to find stuff, and it was just a fascinating group. And we became, you know, all across the country, very close. And And people would drop by and visit as they crossed the country from this list. And my other half would go, "Who's coming this weekend, did you say?" You know, it was some librarian from somewhere who was passing through. So they were the ones who really got into it when it first started.
That's, you know, and it's so amazing that librarians are leaping the walls of their libraries and reaching out to people, whether it's because they share an interest or for any reason whatsoever. And, you know, the fact that they were out there using the internet to connect people with people or people with resources, which is what they do, I'm glad to hear it.
Well, it was in a way it's counterintuitive. What they do is books, you know, and this seemed to threaten, I mean, when you look at it, it threatened their whole existence in a way, and yet they embraced it and used it and, you know, furthered its uses for everyone.
New information delivery systems.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, I thank you.
Yeah,
and other comments and questions are welcome, too. Our number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. I was really, one of the things that you talk about in the book that I thought really was fascinating was librarians participating in virtual social
reality.
Networking site, virtual reality. And, you know, one of the things I expect some people have heard about is Second Life,
mm-hmm.
Where people can construct an avatar for themselves and go into Second Life, and it's like an another reality where people live and work and interact. And there are people who in real life are librarians who are also in Second Life as librarians. I mean, essentially, they're making themselves available as information resources as part of this virtual community.
And leading book discussions. It's really, it was really one of the most fun things that I did when I researched this book was I had my avatar get all dressed up as a character in the 19th century, and I went to a book discussion about Alice in Wonderland with librarians who were dressed as giant rabbits and little blonde girls with pinafores. It was really cool.
And they also, I think, librarians are using the internet not only in that way, actually using that as a way to get together, but it also makes it possible for librarians who are not close together physically, even people who are all over the world, to virtually get together and talk about those issues that are really important to them.
Right, the American librarians. And, you know, the librarians in your backyard have been pioneers in this field, and there are librarians at the University of Illinois there, and at the Alliance Library System, who are in virtual reality networking with librarians from China, from Germany, from Africa, from Australia, from all around the world, and helping them sort of imagine a future, what the future of the web is going to look like and what information services are going to be useful.
One of the things that I wanted to have you talk about and have you talk about what people who are in the library field think about this, it's this whole question of as we digitize things, as we move to digital storage of information, things that previously had existed on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that for preservation. We also do that because it makes them actually much more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But then comes the question, what do we do with the original material? Can we and should we continue to store that? And there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of discussion around that issue that some people have said, well, once we digitize something, we can just get rid of the book, we can get rid of the magazine, we can get rid of the newspaper. Mm. And other people have said, wait, you know, don't, because, you know, who knows how stable our digital storage is going to be, and we'd better hold on to the original. How do people in the field think about that?
Well, it depends on who you ask, really. I mean, because if you ask a public librarian whose space is valuable and is always looking for another shelf for the new DVDs, they're much more willing to let the original get repurposed in another way, donate it to the local prison, or put it in a box for somebody to take away. I'm definitely of the camp that says, don't throw it away, don't throw it away. Once you throw it away, it's gone. And the digital record, in addition to being possibly unstable, we don't know. We haven't worked with it that long. There's a wiggliness to it. It's easy to change. It's easy to tamper with. And there are things that kind of disappear in the digital thing, in the digital record. I look at an article that I clipped out of a newspaper, and I'm trying to track back so I can see if there were any corrections made to it on the digital record. And I can't find the I've clipped the article, and I can't find it in the record of the newspaper because it changed so much. By the time they put it up there, they put a different headline on it and a different lead. Some of the facts were changed. I really like the resource that doesn't change, mm-hmm. being one of my options.
Yeah, and certainly connected with that, there is the question or the matter that only so much material can be migrated to digital form, and then what happens if we say for reasons of storage, maybe we just decide it's too old, it's out of date, nobody's checked it out in 10 years, that we're actually, without even thinking about digitizing it, then we're going to get rid of the original. And then that thing truly is lost.
Well, you know, what if the original is beautiful? I mean, you know, you look at my book and the cover of it is an illustration of a librarian zooming off of the earth. It's beautiful, rich colors. Somebody has hand-lettered the title of the book. It doesn't look the same. It has texture to it. It doesn't look the same as it does in the digital record. It's very flat when you see it on there. You know, you open up some of these beautiful old illustrated copies of things, and it's a completely different feeling that you get from the book or the magazine or the handmade chapbook, mm-hmm. than you get from what you see on the computer screen. I hate to think of, I think of them as art objects also. You don't want to throw those away.
Yeah, and there's a very curious and strange pleasure, I think, that also comes from being in a library and being able to roam the stacks. I haven't done this in a long time, but here in our main library, graduate students and staff people could actually go into the stacks. Mm. And it's tier upon tier upon tier of books. And, of course, first of all, you know what that smells like.
Yeah.
and I had spent time, and I imagine other people who had the time and the privilege, spent time just kind of wandering around, mm-hmm. and looking at books and – unfortunately, I don't know if with online databases or online catalogs, there's a way to replicate that experience of walking down a shelf and looking what's there and suddenly seeing something and thinking, oh, well, that's interesting, and taking it off the shelf. It's something that if not for that actual experience of being able to walk down the shelf and see the thing, you never would have come across that book.
Yeah, the serendipity in the there's nothing like it. And you can have fun going from link to link to link on the computer, but I really don't think there's anything like finding the shelf of poetry anthologies and standing there, you know, with the tactile experience, flipping the pages and seeing birches. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe this is also a little goofy. I think now at this point I've made my peace with online catalogs. But, you know, initially I think I really missed the card catalog.
Yeah. Well, you can get one and turn it into a piece of furniture in your house.
yeah, I suppose. Yes, I would imagine there would have been a time when they set them out at curbside and said,
well,
here,
take
these things. Oh, yes. Now I'm sure on eBay you probably could find a lot of old library card catalogs. We have maybe about 10, 15 minutes left in this hour of Focus. Our guest is Marilyn Johnson. We're talking about some of what you will find in her recent book. This book is overdue. The subtitle is How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. It's published by Harper. You might also be interested in her previous book. It's The Deadbeat. It's about people who write obituaries and about obituaries. Questions here, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have that email, will-talk@illinois.edu. As we now are starting to move into the era of the digital book and the e-reader, and I guess nobody really knows quite what that's going to amount to, but I think we're going to have more and more of that. Certainly there are going to be more and more devices that will allow you to do that. Kindles and iPads and lots of other things. How many libraries now are actually offering books in digital form?
Oh, I think most of them are. And, you know, the e-reader was invented in your backyard. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
And it's great. It's just been a fantastic idea that you could have a whole library of books on a tiny little data stick. I mean, isn't that a wonderfully futuristic kind of thing? And, in fact, that's been the case for a while. And, you know, props to all the people who are out there taking these shelves and shelves and shelves of literature and converting them into portable, accessible, searchable documents. That's just great. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, I love those libraries that buy up a bunch of Kindles and Nooks and Sony e-readers and let their patrons have a choice or take a loaded one out and, keep it for a while.
Yeah. Well, that would be a nice way to find out whether you would like reading that way or not before you actually spend the money on the device for yourself.
Yeah, it would be great. And it turns out to be extremely useful if you are, for instance, going on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a heavy consumer of literature and you just can't, your back won't let you carry all those books around. And then what are you going to do with the books when you finish reading them or mail them back to yourself? It turns into a remarkably efficient way to take a library with you.
I have not tried one of these things myself, so I guess I don't know what the experience is like. Have you read books that way?
Oh, yes.
And do you enjoy that? Is it okay?
Oh, yeah. I read books every way you can read books, frankly. I've read books via email. There are people who write email books. I've read books. I haven't read books on cell phones so much, though I know people who find that really very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't prefer it to a book. I will always love curling up in a patch of sunlight somewhere with an actual old-fashioned book. But I do have one of those e-reader devices, which I use often, and what's really fun about it is you can have the impulse to read a book and order it up from the library or from, you know, an online bookseller, and within seconds, you're reading it.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, you know, that's kind of fantastic too, isn't it?
Yeah, I have heard of people reading books on their iPods. I'm not sure that I would want to do that, but I suppose if you were someplace where that's what you had, and the nice thing about it is it will fit in your shirt pocket, well, you know, maybe that's okay.
Well, you know, I mean, things happen, and you get stuck in traffic, you get stranded at the airport.
Yeah.
It's nice to know if you carry something like that around that you're not going to have to sit and stare into space, that can be useful and, in fact, pleasurable time.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with another caller in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, David, just a quick comment.
Sure.
I read The Deadbeat, and it's just one of the most enjoyable reads, if you can imagine the subject. And just on the strength of that, I just ordered This Book is Overdue. I just think she's a fine writer, and I'm just looking forward to her next book.
Well, great. See, Marilee, we sold you a book there.
Well, thank you so much. That really touches me. Well, let me know what you think.
Well, I sure will. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And I think I should say also that if you were interested in the subject of obituary writing and The Deadbeat, that Marilyn Johnson talked about it with Celeste Quinn at some point on the Afternoon Magazine, and that's probably on our web archive. It should be.
Very
I would
cool.
think they'd be on the web archive. So if you want to go back and hear that interview, you can go to will.illinois.edu, which is our website, and lots of Focus shows and Afternoon Magazine. All of our local stuff is there, so people can get at it that way. So if they'd like to hear about that, they can do it. Questions are welcome, too, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Librarians, I think another thing we really have to acknowledge. Oh, I guess I should have mentioned this. You know, I just sort of stumbled upon the fact that it's curiously appropriate that we're talking about this now because this is National Library Week.
Happy National Library Week!
I should go down to the library and see if they're popping the champagne open down there. They're doing something to celebrate. This is in fact National Library Week.
Of course, and the nicest thing you can do on National Library Week. I mean, you can go smile at a librarian and say thank you. That would be very nice. But you could also drop a postcard to your local legislator or give a call to their office and say, I support libraries. I don't want the hours cut. I think they're important. I think they're important for democracy.
Excellent suggestion. Let's talk with somebody here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I'd just like to point out that reading books on computers is nothing new. Michael, I believe his name is Sims, has been putting Project Gutenberg together for, I was a grad student back when he started, 30 years ago?
Yeah, Michael Hart.
Michael Hart. You're right. Wrong, Michael. And for classical literature, anything that's out of copyright, he's probably got it. And it works just fine. I'd almost rather read a book on the computer. It's easier for me than fine print. Probably says something about my age.
Well, you can adjust, and you can adjust the print size. That's a really wonderful.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of good readers around. There's the Adobe, and Nuance has brought one out that I think maybe is better than the Adobe.
Mm. Do you know what the first thing that he put in ebook format?
No, I don't. It might have been Shakespeare.
It was the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, good
Isn't
for
that
him.
Cool? Yeah.
And I would just say that there are so many really good PC notebooks that are very light that I guess if you do nothing with a computer but read books, Kindle's fine, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. But these little notebooks can do so much more, and you can put a library on that terabyte hard drive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably what's going to happen is as time goes by, there'll be more different kinds of devices, so people can kind of decide, well, what do I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need it to do? How much memory do I need? And do I want to have a real keyboard, which I'm sure a lot of people would say, yes, I'm not going to try to type on a virtual keyboard. So, and I think there's a big wide range of stuff that people can, depends on how much you want to spend, depends on what you want it to do, depends on, how heavy you are willing to have it to be. So, yeah, but you're certainly right. There's a whale of a lot more you can do with any good laptop than you can do with a slate or a touchscreen tablet.
Yeah. But one thing I'm worried about with Kindle and its siblings is that people will use a proprietary format for the file
mm-hmm.
that nobody else can read, and then you can't use your notebook.
Well, it drives librarians crazy. They are very much proponents of open access.
Mm-hmm.
And their feeling, and my feeling too, is that everything should be available at the library. There should be a library option for everybody, and it's discriminatory if not.
I agree.
And it's it bothers me a great deal that devices that I've come to rely on heavily are not friendly to library use. Makes me feel kind of creepy, but I agree, and I think librarians are big, strong voices out there for open access.
And the rest of us need to back you up. The libraries are, if they're not the backbone of democracy, they're certainly one of the key vertebrae. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. And I think that certainly it's an opportunity to put in a strong plug for the fact that librarians and that profession have been very, very strong defenders of civil liberties and free speech and open access to information. And we really have to give them all the credit in the world for really standing up to government in its attempts to find out what people are doing and what information they're accessing and what books they're reading, when the librarian said no. We're not going to do that. We're not going to turn everybody's library records over to you. And they stood very tough on the issue.
There is no profession I would rather have taking care of our public computers. They care about privacy, and they don't just care about it. They're committed to it. Our privacy is absolutely something they have pledged to oversee. And they're committed to open access, and they're committed to helping anybody, no matter what they know, how obnoxious they are, how little they can read. They're really the prince and princesses of democracy.
Well, we're going to have to stop at this point with our thanks to Marilyn Johnson. Her book is This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. It's published by Harper. It is available now. You might also be interested in her book, The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and The Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. And as a matter of fact, I'm consulting our web archive here, and you were on this radio station in April of 2006 talking about that. And if people want to go back and hear that interview, they should go to our web archive, which is will.illinois.edu, and you can hear that, and a lot of other stuff, too. And Ms. Johnson, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
All right. We are going to take a moment or two here to encourage people to support this radio station. One of the things that I really like about doing the show and doing it on the station is that I get to talk to all these great folks, and I can have this nice, long conversation. And if I was doing this on a commercial radio station, I'd have to be stopping every 5 minutes or something like that, and we'd do commercials. And we don't have to do that here. But the reason we don't have to do that is people who listen to the station help pay the bills. And that's what we're doing here this morning. That's what we're asking you to do, is make a financial contribution and help to support the operating costs of the service. We like to think about it as an investment, because the dividends that come back to you are the programs. So now is a great time to do it. We have a couple minutes here before the afternoon magazine gets in our way. And we got a phone number. We got a website. Jack Brighton is here with me.
The phone number, 217-244-9455. The website, willpledge.org. Either way, we'll get you into the mix of the people supporting WILL during this week of our spring fund drive, and we really do need to hear from you. We need your help. We've heard from a couple people during this past hour. Very grateful to them. We would love to have some more people join us before the top of the hour. 217-244-9455 that's the phone number, and the website, willpledge.org. We have a grand total of 532 people who have called in and made a pledge, or gone online, I should say, also this week. So we're more than halfway to our goal of 1,000 people by the end of the week. But we have to do it one at a time. We have to keep rolling here. So, folks, please recognize that, this is very important. You know, people tell us that WILL is personally important to them. Equally important to them is making sure that everyone in the area has access to the programs and services on WILL, whether it's on the air or online. And so as you consider whether to give to WILL. Think about how your gift right now makes it possible for anyone to discover and benefit from the station's services and the things that we broadcast and the things we put on our website. So please call 217-244-9455 right now and give as generously as you can.
Yeah, we often say that the way we do it is one at a time. Well, that is the way that we do it. No,
right.
No single person could provide the costs of keeping the place going. But if everybody kicked in a little bit, you're doing that for yourself and your family. You're doing that for the community. It all goes into the pool of support for the station. And that's really important because over time, sometimes when we do this on television, we have pie charts. And that slice of the pie that's listener and viewer support has grown and grown, and it's a pretty good thing that it has because the government slices have gotten smaller and smaller. And right now, 40% of the money that it takes to operate the station comes from listeners. So that's why we'd like to hear from everybody that we can. And that's why, yes, sometimes we talk about dollar goals, but this time around we've said, well, let's make it a people goal.
Right.
And say, we'd really like by the time that we finish up at the end of the week to have heard from 1,000 people. And that's what we're going for. And I think we are, what, about halfway on that?
A little over halfway. Yeah, 532 so far.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so,
as of this morning.
So if you've been thinking about it, I know you got other stuff to do. This may be not the number one thing on your list, but I hope it will be on your list and that you will call us, that you will go online. It's something that will take, well, you know, probably about a minute, two minutes, not very much time. It will help keep us strong and help make it possible for us to continue to do the programs, because without the listener support, well, we're just not going to be able to do that.
There's one other thing I want to mention, the Chico bag, Dave, because, this is one thing that we're offering as a thank you gift. If you will contribute just $1 a week at that level, $52 for a year, the Chico bag is a shopping bag or book bag. You could put books in it at the library.
You could.
And it's bright orange. Illinois orange, and it's got the WILL logo on it, so it is highly recognizable, both in terms of its utility as a sort of reusable bag when you do your shopping. That shows your good spirit as a green person, and also as a support of WILL. I would love to see these things all over the place at the libraries and the schools, so we will send you that for your gift, 217-244-9455.